Well, welcome everyone to another episode of Benzinga Cannabis Insider. I know I am looking very good today. I am in Detroit at Benzinga headquarters, very, very excited. A complete change in scenery, and we are joined by the amazing Tony Noto from New York. Tony, how are you today?
Me amazing? I mean, you are amazing. You look, I thought you were going to plug your handsome attire. You're looking sharp. You got the cool backdrop with the foliage over there. It's nice to see you in this light.
How is it smelling in New York? I heard it's all cannabis smell now.
I wish I could smell more of the cannabis smell and not the garbage that's piling up on the street, on the corner.
There's a Chappelle, the first time Chappelle was on TV, I think, or at least on late night TV, he did this bit on New York. He arrived at the train station and he was like, "This smells like urine. I'm sure it'll clear you up as soon as I get out, you know, in the open air." It's like,
oh my gosh.
Not really.
No, not at all. But yeah, the smell is pretty bad in New York, but you know, it in the fall, it gets better as we go on into the fall. So.
We got a very, very cool guest today, Mr. Bradley Natras from Urban Grow. You grow on the NASDAQ, but before we get him on, let's get into some news. First out of Florida, Tony, do you want to tell us what we've been seeing in Florida? I think it's an interesting case we're seeing there with guns and cannabis.
Holy cow, this is interesting. Nikki Fried's guns and weed filing slams DOJ for offensive characterization of cannabis users. It was written by Yelena Martinovic, one of the MVPs on the cannabis team. And it's quite a story. You may recall in August, the DOJ urged the federal court to dismiss the lawsuit brought by Florida's agriculture minister, Nikki Fried, which seeks to allow legal medical marijuana users to buy and own guns. The government argued that it was dangerous to trust regular marijuana users to exercise sound judgment. So kind of threw a little shade at marijuana users. Not surprisingly, considering it's Florida, though.
One of the things that the team was saying is like these assertions and analogies are not just insulting, they're illogical, they're ahistorical. It just doesn't work for us, right? And by the way, you know, people shouldn't have to be forced to pick between their right to access medical cannabis and their constitutional right to hold guns. We can discuss it, if, you know, people having guns is good or bad, but right now that is the American law, and this is in complete contradiction with it, right?
Yeah, I mean, if it's amazing that we're not looking at anything else other than that to stymie someone's ability to carry an armed a gun or something like that. There's so many other reasons for someone to not be able to carry a gun, but the country refuses to look at stuff like that. So,
I mean, and honestly, we're seeing President Biden, you know, going on and on about cannabis and how people shouldn't be in jail and how cannabis, you know, isn't a hard drug or anything, everything related to the Brittany Griner case. And still we're seeing these draconian laws in America, supposedly the land of the free, but you know, it's very selective when it comes to what they consider freedoms and rights for people.
Yeah, it's and these types of conversations are going to be they're going to come around more often, because as we get closer to election day, people are going to bring up these issues as they survey the list of candidates in their states on who they can vote in and vote out. So expect this conversation to continue.
In other news out of the markets, the founder of Aurora Cannabis, ACB, Mr. Terry Booth, who has been on the show several times, has joined the board of Acanda as the chair of the advisory board. Acanda, I believe, is a company that operates in Africa. Very, very interesting cannabis company to check out. That is a full extent of the news and not many other details, but some very, very, very good news. Psychedelics related out of San Francisco, where they passed a resolution basically telling law enforcement to deprioritize psychedelics possession and consumption by adults as a crime, right? They're not prosecuting people anymore. They're not jailing them anymore. And this is a good step toward complete decriminalization in California. What do you think?
I'm not sure. I have to I have to look more into it. It's what are your thoughts?
We can discuss whether psychedelics are good or bad. They're definitely very useful, and there's a lot of clinical data and evidence and studies backing the use of diverse psychedelic substances like psilocybin, ibogaine, ketamine, MDMA for the treatment of diverse conditions like PTSD, depression, anxiety. But you know, then there's adult use, recreational use, however you want to call it, unsupervised use without a follow-up of integration is not always recommended. Some people have great experiences, others don't. But the one thing I'm certain of is we shouldn't be jailing these people. If we think it's dangerous, we should offer a better solution. We shouldn't be spending government money and prosecuting them. We shouldn't be spending money on jailing people. Right? It's just expensive for something that, again, very similar to cannabis, is derived from nature. So I think it's a good step in the right direction. And again, a step in toward what is the American ethos of freedom, of people being able to decide on what they do as long as they don't affect others. So as long as if you want to do psychedelic mushrooms, as long as you're not driving and operating heavy machinery, why should the state be involved in this? Why should the police be involved in this, right?
Well, I agree. I guess I wonder if we're jumping to the decriminalization aspect of it without properly giving folks the training and the ability and the freedom to explore the health benefits and the ability to consult their doctor on these topics. And I'd have to look more into the situation in San Francisco to really delve into that. Yeah.
San Francisco is a tough city too. I mean, addictions-wise, it's been hit very hard. I don't know. I like to see psychedelics as an option, really. Anything that's not criminalized could become a more viable option to opioids, heroin, etc. So deep down, it seems like an interesting initiative for sure. From San Francisco, we move to Colombia. Flora Growth Corporation, NASDAQ traded, FLGC, acquired substantially all the assets pertaining to the brand No Cap Hemp Company. Basically, they're getting about 75 SKUs or products added to their portfolio. Flora will pay the sellers 10% of the gross revenue received from the sale of these products, up to a maximum of $2 million, which, again, seems like a pretty good deal. Sweet deal for the people at No Cap.
Sweet deal coming out of Florida. A little silver lining there.
And from Florida to Germany. What are we seeing there, Mr. Noto?
I don't know. I lost sight of my script. What are we seeing in Germany, Javier?
Tilray Brands, TLRY, Canadian-based or Canada-based cannabis company, one of the largest in the world, initiated a public policy roundtable with German regulators on adult use cannabis legalization in Germany. That is super interesting. Germany has been a very hot market for a minute now, especially, I mean, so far for medical, 80 million people, high spending power. And it is expected to become one of the first countries to move to legalize adult use. Many said it would be the first, but it seems like Malta beat them to it this week. Malta, Switzerland is doing a pilot program as well. But, you know, what we're seeing basically in all of Europe, or some of Europe at least, is a move toward adult use cannabis, which I think is very cool. And also, it's been something that it's been around in Europe for a while, right? The famous case of Amsterdam, where you can go into a coffee shop and buy cannabis with no problem, you know, as long as you prove you're over 18 years old. In Barcelona, they have clubs as well. And you can go and get a card and become a part of that club and acquire cannabis. And in general, right, you go even in Germany, it's not a priority for law enforcement. I spent quite some time in Berlin a few years ago, and people were lighting up in parks, etc. And the police would be fine with them as long as they were not causing any trouble, which
Yeah.
Again, I think it's very forward thinking of them, and you know, a continent or several countries that pride themselves in being so progressive, so forward thinking, it's only logical to move toward adult use legalization for cannabis.
Do you think Tilray is the stock to buy now?
I mean, I can't make a recommendation. A lot of people don't like Canadian stocks. I do like the approach that CEO Erwin Simon is taking with Tilray. They're focusing big time on CPG, consumer packaged goods. Mm-hmm. That is their approach for the Americas, for Canada, and for the U.S. especially. In Europe, so far, they've been medical. They are producing in Portugal. But they are betting big, of course, on the German market, and they certainly have an in with policymakers, which I think gives them a pretty good advantage. There aren't many big companies that are as internationally focused as Tilray. I would actually say only Tilray, Canopy, and Curaleaf are really as internationally focused on the producer side of things.
Yeah, Cantor's Pavlo Zuanic, who I believe has this for a transition, is going to be attending the cannabis event in Detroit. Am I correct? I hope so.
There's a lot Chicago, of people in Chicago, Benzinga Cannabis Capital Conference.
Oh, in Chicago.
September 13 and 14.
Chicago.
Palmer House. It's the nicest looking hotel in Chicago and the best crowd you'll ever see at a cannabis conference. The Benzinga Cannabis Capital Conference is returning for its 15th edition. Yes. 15th. We've done 15 of these. We've gotten better every time. We have more than 90% of the market, cannabis market cap there. All the major institutional investors, like 300 institutional investors there, all the service providers, all the big companies, all of the MSOs. It's like the can't miss event. You want to raise money? You got to be there. You want to invest? You got to be there. You want to find a partner? You got to be there. You got to get into the industry? Got to be there.
Gotta
you want to invest as a retail investor? You got to be there. So there's no excuse for missing this event. BZCannabis.com for more details on our Chicago conference happening next week. Hurry up. Get your tickets ASAP.
Meet Pablo Zulanic. Ask him about the German adult-use cannabis market. Talk about Tilray. Talk to him about Aurora. It's a $12.6 billion market. Experts like him are going to be there. They could talk to you about it, and you might be able to boost your portfolio, as they say.
One last quote from Pablo Zulanic, and we'll jump into the interview. But last week, we hosted with El Plante, our Latin American outlet, the most read in Spanish, by the way. We hosted a conference in Panama, Latam Cannabis, and Pablo Zulanic was there, was one of the speakers, and he said he expects a Curaleaf stock to reach as much as 30x, 30 times its value in the next few years. He says international expansion is one of the keys driving Curaleaf's valuation in the future. With that, let's bring on our guest today, Mr. Bradley Natras from Urban Grow, UGRO, UGRO on the NASDAQ. Brad, welcome to Benzinga Cannabis Insider. Welcome back to Benzinga Cannabis Insider. How are you doing today?
Doing fantastic. Thanks for having me. And I will be in Chicago next week for sure.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. So you grow, we grow, we all grow. What are you talking about in this conference? Tell us a little bit about what you're expecting from the conference.
Just a chance to continue to tell our evolving story. Since we listed on the NASDAQ last February, we've had a phenomenal run. We've made good, strong acquisitions of profitable service companies, and the latest was a construction management firm, Emerald. And so today, Urban Grow is much different, Javier, than we were 18 months ago. We're a professional services and design build firm, and we're now building 18-month total turnkey projects, both cultivation facilities, also turnkey dispensaries as well. So It's a chance for me to get the story out there.
How did the deal come about? Let's start there. Let's tee off with that. Give us a little bit of background on how those introductions were made.
You bet, Tony. So when we uplisted to the NASDAQ, the vision, we've maintained the vision. We've stuck straight to the story. Our goal is to be the leading provider of professional services and design build in the global CEA market. So that's cannabis and also food-focused vertical farming as well. And so the first acquisition was an architect firm. We actually two architect firms. And then the missing piece, we had engineering house. We now have the architecture. The missing piece is the construction management, so we can do everything. And it was actually Sam, the leader of the managing partner of the architect firm we acquired, that started to introduce us to other companies that would be, you know, accretive 1+1=5 opportunities. And this construction piece was the last one.
There was a headline a couple of months ago on Benzinga saying Urban Growth signs over $10 million in new design builds and related contracts since acquiring Emerald CM. I am curious, how the hell do you sell so much in such a tough environment, right? Many of the industry is capital crunched, constrained, and still, you know, you go buy this company, instantly start selling like crazy. How do you do it?
Well, it starts with a strong balance sheet. You know, we raised $62 million last February. We entered Q3 with over 23 million of cash, no debt. So we can still, in this environment, find great, strong opportunities. And we still have a strong appetite for acquisitions. But as for Emerald itself, and it's part of the diversification story of Urban Grow, as we're acquiring these companies, they're strong in CEA, and they're also strong in what we refer to as the commercial segment. So we work on design build projects with one of the largest CPG companies, beverage companies in the world. We work on MRI facilities and some healthcare, smaller healthcare opportunities as well. So for us, if one segment is a little bit weak, whether it be cannabis, food, we can move those resources. We have 120 employees, architects, engineers, construction management people, horticulturists. We can move them over to focus on another sector. Now for Urban Grow, fortunately, the services side has not slowed down in the last couple of months. Where we've been hurt, unfortunately, is the CapEx side, you know, the pausing of the states or the pausing of the financing behind single state operators as they grow. That's slowed down the purchasing of equipment systems, and that's where we've been hurt.
That's interesting. Give us an idea as to how the second quarter revenue played out. There was $16.3 million in revenue, a 27% boost. What do you credit that growth to?
So it's bittersweet, Tony. The sweet part is, yes, 27% growth over a year prior. That includes, we only had a portion of the quarter that included the construction management firm. But we did have the inclusion of the architect firm that didn't close until Q3 of 21. The bitter part is this was our first negative adjusted EBITDA quarter in 2 years. And we lost just over 500,000, or had negative adjusted EBITDA of just over 500,000. But, you know, you were just talking about Europe and that market, and identified about 3 quarters ago that we were going to aggressively invest in the European market. So although we lost $500,000, I can justify that because we've hired a managing director in the Netherlands. We've opened an office. The managing director has 2.5 decades of horticulture and automation expertise. We moved some of our strong horticulturists to Europe, starting to build the team. You know, in the last 4 months, we've been in Dubai, Israel, Berlin a few weeks ago, or I guess a couple months ago now, Switzerland next week. And we're really building our brand because I see Europe as in a similar to position where the US was 5 or 6 years ago. And they didn't have that momentum pre-COVID to carry them through like we did in the US. And so now that the flower is starting to blossom again, and our knowledge base and our expertise, it travels really well. So we're really excited about the European market as well, and the opportunities for Urban Grow in that market.
You know, you said it's bittersweet. I like looking at the financials. I like the strong balance sheet, more than $22 million in cash, no debt. Adjusted EBITDA, however, was negative. What drove that, and how do you fix it?
It was the investment. Well, first of all, our fixed costs, our overhead, we were spreading that over lower revenue dollars than we were in Q1 and even Q4 of last year. And that's staffing up to be ready for the pipeline that we have coming to fruition. The backlog of services continue to turn into construction and turn into equipment sales in the future. And I've chose not to cut the team. You know, we cut probably about $1 million a year worth of overhead, most of it tied to equipment sales. And in the past, Urban Grow, I referred to us as a design firm and value-added reseller of equipment systems. And so what we've done is we've, with the model evolving today to that of design build, we're working from an architecture standpoint with our clients probably 3 to 6 months earlier than we were engaging before. So we have a chance to build that relationship, to talk about our services, to talk about equipment systems. And so we were able to cut some of the individuals that are in the field. But, you know, moreover, it's important. Urban Grow is not a manufacturer. We're truly agnostic with our solutions. And today we have approximately 40 strong manufacturers that we work with. So when we're with our client, walking them down that 18-month process, and it's time to talk about lights, we can talk about the benefits of 3 or 4 manufacturers and the pricing, mechanical systems, environmental controls, benching systems. And so I think that true, you know, being agnostic and having the experts in each category is really providing a great value to our clients. So we do that research for them.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious to know about the Latin American market. You talked about how you're excited about growth in Europe. Has that extended to Latin America as well?
Okay, well, Timmy knows me. I cater to my interests.
We invested in some due diligence about a year ago. And what we found is along the equatorial zone, there's a lot of outdoor growing. You know, the labor costs are low, and it's really hard to compete in a controlled environment facility. And so, Urban Grow's focused on indoor ag. And so, yes, there's an increase in greenhouse production in those markets. But in terms of a true indoor, you don't see it. Puerto Rico, I know I'm getting a little bit out of there, but Puerto Rico, high humidity, like Florida, they're building indoor facilities because it's so much easier to control that environment. But for Latin America, no, it's not an area of strength I see for the near term future of Urban Grow.
It's interesting. We were in Panama last week, and the government, like just while we were there on the 31st, the government passed regulations for medical cannabis. They will be issuing 7 licenses, right? And what everyone was saying is, hey, this cannabis will be grown indoors. You know, contrary to popular belief, some of the medical cannabis needs to be grown indoors, even when the conditions are perfect or almost perfect, you know, naturally. So, I mean, there might be some opportunities, some unexpected opportunities there. I'm going to close it up with this last question, right? You talked about your acquisitions, diversification. How does that play against focus, right? How do you balance building a diversified company with focusing on your core businesses with the businesses that drive profitability for you?
So fortunately, all the businesses on the design side drive profitability. We're just probably 3 quarters away from being self-sufficient in terms of not relying on our profits from our equipment sales to turn a profit every month. But our employees are cross-trained. You know, building as an architect, let's say, you're building a cannabis facility or designing one, it sort of can get stagnant, right? It's a box with a nice, beautiful front, and it's very, very efficient. So giving them the chance to engage in a hotel or a small building, it sort of keeps the juices flowing, I would say, for them. But the company's aligned. We are still acquiring creative, profitable, service-focused businesses to bolster our offering or to enter new markets more aggressively and more efficiently. But each of these sectors is strong for us, Javier, fortunately.
I just have a quick two-parter question for you, Bradley, before we wrap up today. I know earlier this year you did a deal with E29 Labs in New York. Mm-hmm. New York has gotten some negative press for how it's handling its recreational legal process. I wanted to hear your thoughts on the New York market now that you're working with E29. And you mentioned acquisitions before, and if you anticipate an uptick in M&A within the cannabis sector this year.
So first of all, with New York, you know, E29, we're working with them and multiple other operators. But what we've seen in New York, same in New Jersey, down south, right, a sort of a delay, regulatory delay in awarding the licenses. And that's what's leading to a lot of the problems that are being faced by the ancillary companies in the industry right now. E29, we start an 18-month project. We start with architecture and engineering. About 4 to 6 months after that, you'll see us enter into a full construction contract. And that's followed by equipment about 1 to 2 months after that. The delays do cause delays in terms of how they're ordering the products. E29 is a phenomenal company. It's a female minority majority owned organization that also has a lot of past OG expertise from the cannabis space. So I'm very confident that they will succeed in being awarded a license. Mm-hmm. But each state is different. It's like each is its own country, right? So right next door in New Jersey, there's going to be a lot of smaller craft-type facilities that are going up. So it's fortunately, you know, we have the dry powder and the strength of our balance sheet to absorb these delays. And I think as these states start awarding licenses, you will find the ancillary side really come back to life again. Because of state rights, when the licenses are awarded, those facilities are built, those dispensaries are built. So it's up to my team to be in early, to talk to as many of the prospective license holders as possible. And so we're proactively helping them get ahead of it, because the first to operate in a new market, cannabis prices the highest, they get to ring the bell first and really enjoy the benefits, the fruits of that effort. Your second question, Tony, about acquisitions, all I can speak to is I think there will be a lot of consolidation like we're seeing from an operator standpoint, but from an ancillary standpoint, I see acquisitions for Urban Grow of other, and I'm very proud of this. We're the only group that's really focused on the services side of the business, right? So we're different. We're different than the other ancillary companies for sure. So we'll continue to make those acquisitions to expand our reach within the global controlled environment CEA market, and also to increase our offering, make sure we can deliver these facilities on a rapid basis so they can be first to market. I can't speak for the others, you know, wholesalers, manufacturers, looking at other manufacturers to acquire, I guess they could, but it all depends on the strength of their balance sheets as well. What I've seen is every, you know, the other groups in the space, they're cutting overhead, they're hunkering down, and and are prepared just to wait it out until we see these states loosen up a little bit, which I foresee happening near the tail end of the year and into 23.
Yeah,
Brad, you're a wealth of knowledge. I have so many questions, including things like, you know, is it more convenient to service a bunch of smaller operators versus larger operators, like, you know, fewer larger operators? But we'll save those for the Benzinga Cannabis Capital Conference happening 13 and 14 September in Chicago, Palmer House, bzcannabis.com for more information. Come meet Brad. It's your opportunity to meet a NASDAQ CEO focused on cannabis. How many people can say they've done that? Very few. So, Brad, see you next week, and thank you so much for joining us at Benzinga Cannabis Insider. We'll see you again very, very, very soon.
Awesome. Thanks, gentlemen. I appreciate your time. We'll see you next week.
Bye, Bradley.
What a great conversation.
Yeah. What do you think about the stuff that he said? I think that was fascinating.
I love it. And I love the approach. I love the approach. And what he said is it's very true. There are very, very few companies in the space focused so heavily on services. And I think it's a massive opportunity for him, for shareholders. Not that this is a recommendation of any kind, but if you want to go check it out, Ugro, UGRO on the NASDAQ. That is our show for today. Tony, any last thoughts?
Last thoughts is I wish that I could make it to Chicago to see you and the Benzinga team and all the wonderful guests that you will have at this amazing event. I encourage everyone who lives far away from Chicago and can't make it in to keep up to date with the latest panels and events via YouTube and via Benzinga.com/cannabis. It's going to be a great time. Guests like Mike Tyson, Ric Flair, just to name two of the of our celebrity guests. Well, who else am I missing on that end?
Vic
athletes
Mensa.
Too. Yeah.
Yeah, a bunch of athletes, a bunch like Calvin Johnson. I mean, just like the lineup is impressive. Go check it out, bzcannabis.com. There's so many speakers. It's mind-blowing. You won't believe it.
Javier, this was a great experience. It's been forever since I hosted with you. I'm glad I did this afternoon.
Yes, sir. I've been missing you. I hope the audience had been missing you as well, and they have been enjoying of the last few shows with your great face.
Yes. And to everyone who tuned in, thank you. And tune in next week. Same Benzinga time, same Benzinga channel.